The following podcast contains explicit language.
You're listening to Working, the podcast about what people do all day. I'm Jacob Brogan. This season, we're sitting down with the writer and artists behind the comic book Batman to learn a little bit about how their stories of the Dark Knight come together from concept to execution. For this episode, we chatted with Seth Mann, an inker who works almost exclusively with his twin brother, the penciler Clay Mann. Seth lays out what exactly an inker does and explains why he's so happy to be employed in superhero comics today. He also discusses what it's like to fill a role that gets less respect from the fans and shares his tools of the trade. Then, in a Slate Plus Extra, Mann talks about why his brother sometimes sneaks Magnum PI references into their art and tells us what his high school students, the students that he teaches art to, think when they find out about his artistic secret identity. If you're a member, enjoy bonus segments and interview transcripts from Working, plus other great podcast exclusives. Start your 2-week free trial at slate.com/workingplus. What is your name and what do you do?
My name is Seth Mann and I'm an inker. I freelance as an inker and I currently I've worked on Batman. That's it.
That's it. So what is an inker in the comic book making process? What is your job?
You know, I meant to look this up after I heard even Tom say it's hard to describe. Traditionally, it was so they could reproduce line art from pencils. So you get a pencil page and you ink it black. What I mean is you just take a pencil drawing and you have it so it's reproducible. Nowadays, though, they can shoot from pencils, so I think that...
When you say shoot, you mean they
scan,
can take the image from...
Yeah. Yes, and inks have, you know, and this is just my interpretation of the medium, but it's changed in the sense that, I mean, some artists don't use them, and a lot of artists use them, you know, do it themselves, but they're still the traditional, you know, you have a penciler, you have an inker, and that person receives the page and they just, you know, straighten up, tidy up, add some, you know, textures, you know, possibly depending on, you know, what's in the page. And that's the part I enjoy because I do work with my brother, Clay Mann, who is a penciler. And his pages are, I know what he wants, they're pretty much what his pencils are. There's not a lot of room open to... adding a bunch of extra stuff. And, you know, the good thing about working with him is if, you know, if I want to, then, you know, I can ask and he'll say yes or no. But, yeah. It's a hard question to answer. I would say go watch Chasing Amy.
So there's a joke in Chasing Amy where someone describes inkers as tracers, right?
Yes.
Is that fair?
Depends on what panel. But
sure.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, yeah, I mean, it's an easy way to describe it, but there's a lot of people would say that's not what it is. And it's not. But it, I mean, to, you know, it is, it's in a hard, it just depends who you're working with. Some artists, when you get the pencil pages, they're very loose. And again, there's people like Clay who, to be honest, other professionally, it's the only person I've ever inked other than being paid to a commission to ink someone for fun. And his stuff is pretty tight. He knows exactly what he wants. And
when you say tight, you mean the details mostly there.
Yes, I apologize. The pencils are clean. The information is there in pencil and I'm not making up anything as I go. Unless it's something organic like trees and rocks and bricks and things like that.
So, you know, as you've already suggested, you have a relatively unique professional role in that you primarily, if not almost entirely exclusively, draw over your brother Clay's pencils. How does that relationship actually work, though? I mean, what is it? Well, we can talk more about the particulars of how you spend time inking a page, but how is your interaction with him work?
It's nice. We're twins. So we've grown up
identical or fraternal?
Identical. And we've grown up with the same interest in a lot of things, and we think very much alike. You know, everything, we enjoy the same movies, pretty much the same person, you know, from an outsider's perspective. So when it comes to the pages, it's pretty easy, because even before I get a page, he'll always, which is nice for me, because I'm mainly a fan, so I'm lucky to do what I do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I get to read some scripts that he gets, and even if I'm not inking the book, and he'll, you know, I get to read them, and he'll show me all his thumbnails, and, you know, I'll ask opinions sometimes, and I get to see kind of it build. When I'm actually working on the pages, it's intimidating because he's my brother, so I care a lot about what it looks like. So when it comes to getting the work done, sometimes it can be stressful because mm-hmm. If I could work faster, you know, on anything, I would get it done. So it's a comfortable thing because he's my brother, you know, mm-hmm. But it's also stressful because I care.
Do you ever have sibling drama with him, though, or is it purely professional 100% of the time?
No, we've gotten in some arguments over, little things like quibbles anybody would have. You know, when you're closer to people, it's easier to get on their nerves sometimes, or let it show, sure. At least. So
sure.
But mostly, no, we do not.
Do you have a sense of how your working relationship with him resembles or differs from that of other teams of pencilers and inkers?
There's some people, and I won't say names, but there's some people, because again, I'm a fan, and I've talked to some people, and I just assume they're, you know, buddy buddies with their pencilers. The inker has a really tight relationship, and you know, when I was first getting into inking, I was already inking, but I was very dissatisfied with what I was doing when I saw it in print. And I would go talk to inkers or go ask them. And I'm fortunate enough that when I would attend a convention, a comic convention with Clay, as he's been in the business much longer, I was able to talk to some of these people or, you know, go out to dinners and, you know, socialize. And my first assumption was, oh, you're friends with this penciler. And mm-hmm. they were like, no, we don't really talk that much. And so I think that naturally, that he, you know, we have a relation in the sense that we're brothers. I think we probably communicate a lot more than what I have imagined that some of these people who've been teamed up a little bit longer would have been doing.
Yeah. One of the things that David Finch pointed out when we spoke to him in a previous episode is that inkers actually have to be really talented artists in their own right. I mean, you're in a position where you can really screw things up if you, you know, put the wrong line weights in and so on. You, I assume, then must be pretty talented. Do you ever get to do pencils yourself?
No, I've never done pencils. I do draw, and I went to school for, majored in fine art. So I dabble here and there. You know, I like art. I like looking at art. I appreciate art. I wish I had more time to do it, but you know, when I do have time, I'm actually an art teacher, a high school mm-hmm. art teacher. So when I have time, I'm generally getting paid for it. And that's when I'm picking up the freelancing as an inker. So, I do draw. I'm jealous of my brother, but mm-hmm. he's been doing it, you know, as a full-time job for years. So he's an inspiration. I like looking at his stuff and, you know, all art, but I draw. But I mean, it's nothing that's, hopefully people will see it one day. I'd like to do my own thing, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, inkers often get the short end of the reputation stick within the comics business more generally. You've done some pretty high-profile stories with Clay. You did the issue 24 of Batman, the proposal issue that we've talked about. And you're working now, I think, on the War of Jokes and Riddles, which is a big Batman story that Tom King is doing. Do you feel like you've been able to develop a profile or reputation within fandom? Do people know who you are?
Yeah, when we're at the conventions, they think I'm Clay. And no, you know, we'll be at the tables and he'll ask me to go with some of these things with him, and we'll be at the table and people will come by and, you know, they'll be like, oh, Clay, sign the book. And then they'll walk away and he'll be like, hey, this guy inked it. And so, but I would say, I mean, people know there are fans of artwork and then there's fan of the artist. And if they just know Clay, they may not actually be aware of, you know, our relation, that we may look alike. So it might say, oh, this is his inker. But I don't know. Yeah, honestly, it does. Yeah, people pass by me a lot. And it's not, I'm not one that they're generally after. And that's fine, because I understand it.
Does that ever sting?
I honestly don't know how to answer that, because the person that they're there to see is my brother, which it stings in the sense, I want him to be successful, but it stings in the fact that you're looking at somebody that you know, and you know how hard they work and you know how hard you work to help them, and then they don't know. So yes, I guess it does. I can't answer for somebody work, you know. It's harder for me to answer that, I think, because of the relationship I have with my brother. But yeah, it bugs me sometimes, you know, but nothing against the artist. It's just like, how do these people not know, like, what I do and how hard I work?
How did you break into comics, though? Was it just through your brother?
Yeah, my brother worked his butt off and got in. And I went to college to major in art. That's all I did. He worked as a plumber and a roofer, and then he, you know, in his time off, he was trying to be a penciler and got in, and over years of being persistent, and we all, you know, and there was things he was working on, and not that he wasn't happy with what the inking was, but there were things that he was, little things that he would be like, oh man, I think you could have probably interpreted that a little better, what I did there in pencil. And so we were talking, and we wanted to for a while, and I think he had asked a few times, and I did a couple sample pages and sent them in, and I had talked to his editor. He was working on X-Men at the time, and they said, yeah, they're good. And but, you know, nothing of it, because he had an inker. And then there was one weekend, and this was in like 2011, when he was doing an X-Men book, and I got a phone call from Clay, and he's like, you want to ink some pages on the X-Men? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, okay, they're due after the weekend. And it was like a Friday. So I think we knocked out like half a book in a weekend. And I just drove home a couple hours and asked my mom if I could borrow a room in her house. And away, you know, Clay lived elsewhere, but we were close, so we could just trade off pages. And I just sat in a room and worked the whole weekend and didn't sleep a lot, and just got the book done, and that was it. So after that particular issue, I think he started a Magneto series with Scotty Young writing, that I got to ink from the cover throughout that mini series. So that's kind of how it started. Just kind of, I got my foot in the door and got stuck.
How did you make your way from there to working on Batman with Tom King?
I just grabbed my brother's cape and just wrote it. I mean, he's I wish it was more of an answer. My brother, it's a small community, the comics thing. From you know, I hear that, but I think it's absolutely true. There are a lot of books, but you know, it's about who you know. And I am a fan of Tom's, and basically Clay was as well. And he hustled. He knows some guys who know Tom, and they're buddies. And you know, Clay wanted to meet Tom, and he met Tom, and told me stories.
Serious happened.
Yeah, it told me of Mrs. where he's like, I was going to talk to Tom, but he had to go. And then it was the next convention. I'm going to talk to Tom. And then he did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then it was pretty much it. But
are you a Batman fan in particular? I mean, is it fun to be drawing the long-lived Cape Crusader?
It is. It is. It's one of those. I did the comics. Let's check off the bucket list. But then there are certain, you know, I've done an X-Men cover, and that was one thing I will be happy that I've done. And Batman with Batman's good as Batman, but Batman with Tom King as he's doing, you know, it's such a talked about book, and I think it will, you know, be something talked about for a long time. It's even better.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I'm really happy the last issue we did. I know we haven't really gotten a 24, but the last one, I mean, that's, I didn't do a lot of work in there, but that's something that is going to be monumental. And then in 30 that I just did with Kite Man, I didn't get to do the first part of the second part.
Kite Man is this minor Batman villain that Tom King loves for some reason, right?
Yeah, but I don't know. I just really liked it because he's an underdog kind of character, and I really liked working on that book, but as far as drawing Batman, I haven't really got to actually ink him very much. I've been on the title, but I'm very happy with what I've done and got to do. And yes, I'm very happy that I have a little comic shelf in my house with some things I've done, and Batman has moved to the top because it's Batman.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's a typical day like for you? You said that you also teach high school art, so I assume you're not inking comics pages from 9 in the morning to 5 at night or something.
Yeah, I waited to tell you that before you brought me on. But
it's an important part of the job.
I teach high school, but as far as the inking goes, you know, there's weekends, and I also have two children. It's when I get home off work, and you know, I get through their routines, and I can have a page out in a separate room and, you know, do a little here and there. And then, but typically I work it in the evening, from like 7 until, that's currently, when I was working on these last issues, like 7 until I go to bed. Prior to kids, I just work when I got home, and it was like a second job. So it's, my days are, you know what it is, it's the work's out, and when I can get to it, I get to it. And when there's a deadline, because again, they don't move, you sleep a little less. And that's pretty much it. It's like a second job. People will have a day job, and then they have a night job. It's my night job.
It seems like, though, you've got to be pretty reliant on your brother's schedule. I mean, if he's not regular, if he's not turning pages in on time, then that's going to throw your life off a little bit.
Yeah, and it's vice. It certainly is. And you know, Tom's great because day one the script's done. I've been working with Clay since 2011, and I've got to say, he might be the only person I've seen that from. So it's really easier for Clay to get an idea of what he's gonna do, but it's, you know, some artists, I'm sure it's a little easier. And for Clay, you know, working with Tom it's Tom King, and it's Batman. So it's, you know, it's hard. It takes a lot to get started. But yes, once he gets started, whatever he does affect my schedule. But again, where, you know, we communicate well for the most part on, you know, what's hopefully going to happen. But yes, if he's a little later, he needs an extra night, then it's me. But he's typically not the late one. I'm slower. And I'm, you know, he does what he can, and then I do what I can to meet the deadlines. And it's hard. It's a hard thing. You know, I'm happy I teach. I mean, you know, there's people out there that they stay up late and they work hard, and it's not always that they mismanage time. It's that it's art. You know, it's hard sometimes. It's hard to sit down and be creative when you're not feeling creative.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep. While you're listening, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now: getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So, just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Do you have an office or studio that you're working out of, or is it just spread out on your dining room table?
In my last house, we had a spare bedroom, I had a little office set up in there. In my new house, which is still not put together, no one else is in there, so I call it a really giant office, but it's just we have a living room and a den, and I have the living room to myself, so it's a, but yes, it's on a dining room table, and I do have a drafting table, a small one, but to be honest, over the years, I end up hunching over so much that the dining room table I rather like, because I can more lay over the work. Mm-hmm. I've worked in I've worked anywhere. Sometimes if I'm on a deadline, I've even just the hour of filling in blanks on my lunch break, I'll take a page to school and during my lunch break I'll fill in some blanks and scan it in just so I can work anywhere. I mean, I've met anchors who work in hotel rooms and
yeah. Well, so when we were talking with David Finch for a previous episode, he told us that some anchors work digitally through a system called Blue Lines. But it sounds like you are working on the physical paper that your brother hands to you. Is that right?
Yes. When I did a couple sample pages years ago on Blue Line, I don't know how people can do it, because, unless I just haven't seen really good quality blue line. But to me, when the pencils are in front of you, you can interpret a lot with the pressure or just the value of what's in front of you in terms of maybe that line width that you referred to, or, what they want. The blue to me, I would be terrible. I don't think I could, and it wouldn't be fun for me. I don't have to do it, this job. And again, I do it, and I love the idea of doing it. When I have the pages in front of me, sometimes it's stressful, but again, I get to put some things up in my house that I'm a fan of that I got to contribute to. And if it was blue line, I don't think I'd be doing it, because it's not, I don't know. It's just, I think I would struggle with that, because it's
you wouldn't have that physical object.
It's literally. I've seen Clay's had to send out blue lines before, and there's a lot lost in the interpretation of blue line to pencil. But again, maybe I've never had a blue line of Clay's that I had to do. So maybe because I know him so well and what he wants, maybe it wouldn't be hard. But. I'm scared of it, but I unfortunately don't have to. And as far as digitally, I don't see the point. If anybody was going to do digital inking, I would just assume it was the artists themselves, because,
Why have someone else do that?
Yeah.
So, what are your tools of the trade, though? I mean, I assume you're not, when you say inking, you're probably not using, a Bic gel pen like I am to take notes as we talk, right?
This Batman 24, there's that open spread page that Tom was talking about with, you have Gotham Girl and Batman up on the top of a satellite tower, and it's supposed to have a sense of vertigo. I think for that bird, there's a bird in the foreground. It's up in the top left. I think I left. That's like my lunch hour bird. It didn't take me an hour, But it was, I think I had left my stuff at home. And I think I just for the scan to get it in, I had to do a patch. You mentioned messing up. I think I forgot my little toolkit. And I think I used I may have used a Bic pen, and I may have used like a Crayola black line marker to try to do that. And it messed up bad. And I made a patch, which is just basically re-inking it and then laying in that patch on the actual work before you scan it.
So you use like a different piece of paper and put that on top of the other one?
Yes, which Clay hates, but I tried. I forgot I did it, actually, because I didn't give him back that original page until much later. And then I could just see him, he didn't say much because that book, the deadline on that book was really tight. So I think he forgave me, but he's typically not happy with having patches, but who would be? But it had to get done. But yeah, I've used anything. I use, when I first started off, I tried using Brush, and that was during that X-Men weekend. And
Here you're like literally dipping a brush into a pot of ink?
Yes.
And then painting with it?
Yes. And I wasn't even through with a panel, and I had inked like a contour of Cyclops. And Clay came in, and he's like, and I told him not to watch over me because I was super nervous. It was my first thing that I was doing. And he showed up where I was working and came in, and he's like, I'm not showing you until I'm done. And he's like, it's my artwork. You need to show me. I was like, all right. And I moved it, and he's like, what are you inking this with? He's like, it's too thick. And I'm like, it's a brush. He's like, no. So then there's a nib, which is the metal. It's like a Hunt little, it's a, I don't know how to explain to your viewers who don't know, but it's a literally a piece of metal tip that you dip into the ink as well.
So it's like a fountain pen?
Yeah, I guess. And I used that, and it's, and again, all this was, growing up, I didn't know what the tools were. Internet was scarce if it was even available. And, I didn't even know they drew the comic pages larger until mm-hmm. much later.
Because they're on these 11 by 17 sheets of Bristol board paper, mm-hmm. right?
And I don't think I knew that until I might be, Clay would be better because he's really good at remembering things. But I would say like maybe ninth grade, it dawned mm-hmm. on me that, these are maybe my first convention I went to. But yeah, so I tried the nib, and I think I did that issue with the nib, and to be honest, I use anything. I do still use the brush pen to do. I really like any time I can incorporate a dry brush where it just looks like rough ink on the page. That's texture. But I'll use pens. I use anything that I can get to successfully get the mark I want on the paper. But my favorite thing to do is when there are those things where. And there was in 24, the sun was coming through, it was behind Batman, and Gotham. They're having the conversation and the light was kind of flaring, and, I got to use a lot of the dry brush, in the issue. So, the way it was colored, it's kind of flared out, and that's mm-hmm. my favorite stuff to do. The bodies and the contours and, the things that are a little tighter, they get very...
Those textural details.
Yeah, those are fun to do. And I don't think in that issue there was any, like, splattering, but whenever I can do that, I really like to... That's the part I enjoy because it's a little more whatever happens, happens. And that's where I feel like I don't need Clay to tell me. He can mm-hmm. say, hey, play around here. And those are my favorite parts because I get to get a little experimental or... in fabric sometimes, like he'll have, the pencils will just say, this is black. But then when I'm like, well, maybe there's some stitching in here. So I'll kind of add the texture, in some of those black areas that I just feel kind of make it a little bit more interesting, black and white. sometimes with the color, you can't even see the things that I put in for textures, but it's my favorite part. But
well, let's talk about how that comes about a little bit. You live in Florida. Does Clay also, does he live nearby? Does he like physically deliver pages to you?
Yes. This past year, yes, we've been in the same area, about a year, a little bit longer maybe. Yes, we live in the same town, Deland, Florida, and who I found out, Jordy, lived, Clay told, I didn't have the pleasure of speaking to her, but Clay was communicating with, she lived in Deland for, or I think she stayed there for a short amount of time, which is...
You're referring to Jordy Belair's, the colorist on a lot of these books. Right?
Yes, and I'm a big fan of hers, and that's another part of inking is I love seeing the colors on top of them, as a fan, but I was very happy mm-hmm. to work with her, and I just thought it was very interesting. She knew where our little town was, but he does. He drops off the pages, and sometimes late at night, and he has a studio. He rents out a space, and he works in, and sometimes I'll just go there to pick him up. Batman 24 was done in his studio, and it was literally us trading pages back and forth, so he didn't have to go very far except to turn around in a desk and
What's the first thing you do when he hands off a page to you? What state is it in at that point usually?
It really depends on the deadline, but you know, if the page is done when I first get it, I can picture it inked, and it's very exciting because I'm like, I know what this will look like. But then that's easier said than actually doing it, and then it's complete. Now on Batman, and since this whole podcast is about that particular issue, I'll kind of talk about those pages. Some were done, or some panels, you know, depending on the script, there might be four or five panels. Tom likes panels, so there's lots of panels. There's actually a fairly amount of small numbered panels in that issue, but some of the panels weren't done, or some were emptied, or half the page was drawn, and I'd have to ink that, and then I'd have to hand it back to Clay, and he would finish the page, and I'd be working on, you know, a separate page, and then we would trade back and forth.
You would do the panels he had finished already, but mm-hmm. but then let him finish the rest of the page.
Right, which would not work over Blue Line. Like, you couldn't, unless they were mm-hmm. going to build a page in Photoshop. Again, that's an advantage of one, us being brothers and living near each other. But, you know, Clay, as Tom mentioned kind of briefly in the podcast, is Clay... Man was not going to be working on that book originally, and I don't know the ins and outs of how it really happened. But when Clay got the book, it was a tight deadline for Clay. He's not super fast, and it was one of those things where when I came on to ink it, it was kind of like, Seth, this isn't going to be something you can kind of take your time on. We got to get this done. So by the end, those last couple days, I'm not even kidding. We were up super late, both of us in a little office, and him drawing and I'm inking simultaneously, turning around and trading off pages and handing back pages. And then, do this for me, do this for me. So
do you ever read the script before you dive into your own part of the job, or you just trust that, that Clay got everything right?
No, I mean, I the only way I get a script, and you talk about collaboration, is, again, I'm really lucky I work with somebody I get to talk to, my brother, because, you know, you kind of asked earlier, as far as the fandom goes, does the inker, you know, are we as present as, you know, the people before us, the artist and the writer? I've never received a script. If I have, maybe once since 2011, unless Clay gives it to me, which, I don't know, kind of doesn't make you feel part of the team. But working on Batman, I feel like when the emails go out, I'm looped in, or Clay will forward me something, and he's really good at that because, you know, I want to read it as a fan, but then he asked me to read it because he likes me to, you know, again, he shows me his thumbnails, and we kind of, you know, I'm a tough critic. I'm his brother. So, you know, he occasionally uses an idea of mine. But he says even, and not that my ideas are bad, but he says any extra ideas will just give him a third idea. Yeah, I get to read the script, and there's been some times where I've maybe spotted stuff, but Clay's really good at that. When he's breaking down a storyboard, he'll find things that, you know, the artist is a storyteller, and he will, you know, he'll find some things, and he'll have to, you know, kind of adapt in his own way to feel so the story flows. I don't have much to do with that other than that. I like to edit my brother's stuff and ask questions. Mm-hmm. But again, he's very easy at saying, I can't do that because this happens mm-hmm. on the next page. And that's part of the penciler's role, which, you know, I'm sure David talked about.
Yeah. So what are the most important parts of the inking process? One of the things that David talked about, for example, is the importance of adding line weights to help distinguish between what's in the foreground and what's in the background. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you absolutely have to make sure you do to ensure that a page comes out right?
I would say on the inking you know, again, it really depends on the penciler you have. And I've only inked clay professionally, but I am aware of the, you know, what needs to be done. Clay, if a page is really loose, the line weights aren't there. And yes, if something's in the foreground, you want it to be a little heavier. And the things that are in the background to be the thinner lines. It's your job to kind of do that. Now, clay is not a fan of super thick lines. So sometimes you, he even if it's in the foreground, he'll just say a little thicker, but not too thick. And he'll always give me those notes, and he'll write notes on the page a lot. Sometimes when you get a pencil page, it'll be like, notes, do this, do it this way, you know, and, but yes, typically, if a penciler pencils fast, and there's some pencilers who put in the line weight. I mean, you know exactly what you're supposed to do. And that, to me, is the kind of, on a deadline, it's nice. But and Clay does that. He'll vary his line weights and pencils. So it's there for you. But then there are things that are open to interpretation and of what you feel are not are correct. But again, I've done some things to Clay's artwork where, I don't remember what book it was, but there was a face I did, and I went a little too heavy, and there was a 2-page spread of Magneto lifting some trucks in there, and in the X-Men Magneto series, and it was again my first real series, and I was really excited, and I got this double-page spread, and when he saw the inked page, I had gone really heavy on the cars because they're floating up in the air towards a viewer. And it was a bird's eye shot, so the ground was very low and thin. You were looking down onto the street. And he said, I had to go back in with a correction fluid and brush in on the contour and thin out all the lines because he said he felt it looked too cartoony. So, there are things I can do, because I do work in close relation with Clay is, before I turn something in, even when I didn't live with him, he'd get first pass, and he'd kind of be like, can you do that? Can you make it a little thicker? Can you do this? But, there are a lot of, but that's just art though. I mean, it's just, you know, it's, if the penciler doesn't do it, the inker should do it. David's got one of the best inkers, Danny Mickey. So, yeah, I can imagine David mm-hmm. has a lot of trust in him to do his work. And I think Clay has a lot of trust in with what I do to his because, again, those are two. I've been working with Clay for a number of years. And, I know David's had a few inkers, but he's still consistently worked with Danny over the years.
What's the best way to learn a language? Immersion, living where the language is spoken and using it every day in everyday situations. But if that's not on the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. I've used apps in the past to learn new languages, but when I came across Babbel, I wondered if it could help me refresh my knowledge of a language I once spoke well, but was now a little bit or quite a lot rusty. I have to say, I was impressed. The advanced lessons were really useful, tips and idioms that can help with in-depth conversations on topics that I can actually imagine chatting about. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel is designed by real people for real conversations, and the tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. What's more, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for working listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for working listeners, at babbel.com/working. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/working, spelled BABBEL.com/working. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise, and with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Do you ever have the opportunity to add details to a page? I mean, we talked about texture and variegations of light and such, but are there ever moments when you want to throw something into the panel that Clay didn't put in there?
Yes. Early on in our working career, I was adding the dry brush, which again is when you have a brush, just for the viewers who don't know, is you can dip a brush in your pot of ink and it's very black and rich. And just like when you first dip a paint roller or a paintbrush into a can of paint, the paint comes out and it's, you know, very fluid and it's solid on the wall or the paper, whatever you're working on. And dry brush is simply that. The brush is drying out. So it creates a rough texture, almost like if you took a piece of paper and laid it down on a sidewalk and did a rubbing, you'd get that grit. It's a different texture, but a similar similar look. I would, without his permission, I would add a little bit to the pages, and he hated it. and and that's when he'd get mad, and in a nice way, not like just, it's his artwork. I mean, it's understandable. I was like, oh, come on, man. Like, it looks good. And he would be like, no, it's not there. I don't like it. Now he uses it. It's one of those things that he uses a lot of it now, or sometimes he won't even put something in and he'll say, Seth, do your dry brush thing, like on a road and or something like that, or something that's brick or anything that has a really rough texture. Again, it's not someone's face where, you know, the each line matters. You change something slightly, it no longer looks like a person. The differences between Clay and I's faces are very slight. So, you know, just a change in a line weight on a face or under an eye can change the perception of the face. So those are things I don't really mess with, and I try to stay true to the marks he makes. But yeah, anytime I can have some fun, I'll just make a quick text and I'll be like, hey, can I do this? Or you mind? And generally he doesn't. As long as it's not a figure, I can pretty much have some fun, like in buildings and things like that. I can kind of a little do what I want kind of thing on the figures. It's kind of do what he told me.
If you're comfortable talking about it, what's the financial side of this like for you? It's effectively a second job, you've said, but is it a comfortable amount of money that you're getting from the work you're putting in, or is it really just a labor of love?
Everyone makes different. The longer you've been in, probably what book you are on makes a difference. My Batman title, me working on Batman, which is awesome, has nothing to do. I've never received, I'm not receiving more money other than I will in a royalty check that comes out because it sells more. But I have a page rate. I couldn't live off that because I'm slow. So if I could do 2 pages a day, you could say that's not that bad. But I'm also, even though I work with Clay and he's been in for years, I don't have a huge back catalog of, I've only worked with one artist. I haven't performed, I don't work, I freelance and even full-time people freelance, but I freelance as a part-timer. So there's more to make, I'm sure. And you make a lot on the back end. And Tom even mentioned it with the royalties. So, depending on where you can get and what book you'll make more, you'll get a check, every few months, or it's a little longer than that, but you'll get a check. And if you factor that in, I guess you go to convention and you sell the pages, you can factor that in. I don't really do that because for me, it's a part-time, but if I break it down hourly, because I'm slow, it takes me, I think the quickest page I did, and it was on this last issue on 30, is I think a page took me like 8 hours, and I was like, man, I did that so fast. I've taken 12 hours on a page. So when you break that down, I'm not making that much, because the other thing maybe your audience doesn't know is it's all, when you freelance, it's, you're not paying, you have to pay the taxes on that money, and nothing's been taken out. You then have to take out taxes and things like that. So, for me, but again, on a spectrum, I'm not at the top. So I'm sure people, people who do this day to day, they're faster. They've been doing it longer. They've probably had, higher page increases and things like that. So,
yeah. So it's mostly a labor of love for you, or partially a labor of love for you. It's a job. But what is it like for you as a comics fan to see the book finished, to see it with Jordi Belair's colors, with Darren Bennett's letters bound up on your shelf? What does that feel like?
It's that's why I don't mind the long hours. It's great. I mean, it really is. I mean, sometimes it destroys you because you open something you spent, when I first started and I didn't know what my work to look like printed because it looks completely different. It was like, oh my goodness, that's just terrible on it. And it looked, it made me feel bad. And then I started, as long as I've been doing this, I don't think that I felt comfortable with what I was doing until we transitioned to Valiant. And then, so when I came in at DC, I've been pretty happy with what I've done. And I've enjoyed most of the things that I've seen printed. But the Batman stuff with Jordi and his, I've been really happy. I love flat colors, or not that they're flat, but they're not like super shiny. Mm-hmm. And these robust things are just as, you can see the line art. And it doesn't distract, but it just complements it so well. And I've always loved that kind of coloring. So to read the comic with the lettering and stuff, and it being something that you're a fan of, the writer, the colorist, the letter, everybody, the artist, it's really nice. And again, it's, I've gone into stores and seen my stuff on a shelf, and it's just kind of like, it makes me happy. I mean, I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us to talk today, Seth. Really learned so much.
I hope so. I appreciate the invitation.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Working. I'm Jacob Brogan. If you're enjoying our exploration of the creative process, be sure to check out Slate's podcast, Represent. It's a space for discussion, highlighting movies, TV, and online shows created by and or about women, people of color, and those in the LGBTQ community. Join Aisha Harris as she dives deep into conversations with critics about the latest pop cultural news and filmmakers about what they do and how they do it. We'd love to hear your thoughts about Working. Our email address is working@slate.com. I read those emails and I try to respond to all of them. It means so much to me to hear your thoughts, your suggestions, and all that stuff. You can also listen to past episodes at slate.com/working. Thanks to Mac Dula at WMFE in Orlando, who literally helped us connect with Seth in the wake of Hurricane Irma. And this episode wouldn't have been possible without production assistance from AC Valdez, who is now and always a hero. It was also edited by the great Benjamin Frisch.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.